right, we're back.
We're back.
Big up Francophiles once again. It's another day. I've actually had a lot more coffee than the last one, as you can tell.
Yep. I did a little coke for this episode in honor of Jez, so we could do it like he really wants, because he likes drug-fueled ruminations on his phone.
In 1983 today, where he's going to do one more movie than he did in his run in 1982, where he shot 12 movies. Though he's outdoing himself this time with 13 movies. And
back with Golden Films.
Back with Golden Films, and wow, what a way to be back. If you remember where he left us in the last one, well, not in a bad place. I guess Lillian's not the worst, but Diamonds from Kilimanjaro, the poop, the stinkiest poop in the Jess barn. One of them. It's definitely one of the bigger.
I think one of the stinkiest poops, but I
don't. Yeah, maybe not the stinkiest, but it is. It's pretty stinky that that movie has been restored. And someone put time into making that.
I mean, I'm always happy for everything to be saved, so that's fine. But don't.
Yeah, seek but it out. There's a couple others we could get to before we do Diamonds of Kilim and fucking Jaro. Let's get let's maybe get more copies of this next one out to people. How about that? Yeah. You know, he's got over 180 movies. We should have prioritized this better. But rights being what they are, hey. Yep. So here we go. We're starting off hot, big time winner in my mind, and I'm sure Will's. This is Night Has a Thousand Desires. We are returning to Jess and his love of Lena being controlled by an otherworldly presence, possibly another person, something from another dimension. Yeah, Lena being hypnotized, her mind taken advantage of to commit murder, a la Venus and Furs. There's a lot that really ties this movie to Venus and Furs, in my opinion. Yeah. This is a pretty Venus and Fursy riff. And it even starts with an opening shot of, someone, her character being blindfolded and having to like be a fortune teller. She's like a psychic at the beginning of this movie. Recalls a movie maybe called Deep Red a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It also, the title, this is very interesting because I noticed this when we discussed Bloody Moon. The title could also be a reference to another Spanish slasher movie called Pieces that you all certainly know about. We love Pieces here, but there's some things cribbed from Bloody Moon in Pieces.
It's a cool-ass movie, but Bloody Moon's better, and so is this one.
Absolutely. So it seems Jess knew this and decided to title the movie after the Spanish title that Pieces got, which was A Thousand Cries Has the Night.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess, knowing our boy and his wolf fart jokes, I would assume he's having a little fun at making fun of Pieces, but that's okay. And yeah, we always at the Francophiles here, Bloody Moon over Pieces any day.
Oh, it's just true.
Any day.
I would love, look, I will engage in a town hall style debate if any of y'all want to, and we will win.
Yeah. This is an easy one. But like I said, we're back in the realm of Shining Sex, Diabolical Dr. Z, Venus and Furs, Nightmares Come at Night, all that good stuff. And Lena is being possessed and going around killing people. That's all you need to know. That's the rest, because the rest of the movie is about mood. It's about atmosphere. It's about taking things that you would see in a script that would read as completely boring and suffusing it with such emotion and beauty. And this is what we're talking about when we bitch about these other, when certain movies of his fall short. It's because we want him to do shit like this, because this is what makes him so good and memorable as a filmmaker. And Night House of Thousand Desires is a late period masterpiece. Not really in his late period technically, but
no.
This is definitely one of the you know, kind of like House of Usher, like this is one of the great last masterpieces that yep. he's going to turn out that is going to make you think of the best of his 70s work.
Yep.
In terms of drug scenes, has my favorite Jess drug scene of any movie.
Truly a jaw dropper. It doesn't matter how many times I see this movie. The fucking spell that that scene casts is unmatched. I don't like it. God damn it. Truly the feeling when someone first turns you on to fucking Andrzej Żeląski, right? And you, whether it's Possession or one of the others, and you watch it and you're like, oh my God, like I couldn't get away from that movie even if I wanted to. This scene is like that.
Yeah.
This scene absolutely grabs you and you are held hostage for what should be a very simple thing where four people are in the same room to smoke weed and fuck. And it turns into one of the scariest, most unsettling things Jess ever filmed.
If only weed could be like this. It's very clear that Jess has never probably smoked weed. Like I'm more we see here, I'm really convinced that this man has never touched it. But that's yeah. okay. It doesn't matter. What he's interested in is the transportive nature of an object to take you to a different realm. And whether that's drugs, sex, mind controlling aliens, you know, weird slime that women imprison you in cages and drip on you. It's all about a mood altering substance. And that is what his movies attempt to do. And that's probably why he doesn't like drugs, because I think he feels that what he can achieve with his movies is better than any drug could do.
Well, he also clearly doesn't need it, because if your brain works like this, yeah. you don't need drugs. Truly. No,
absolutely.
I wouldn't do them either if I just had these things in my head. But this is a great example of I got someone hooked on Jess with this movie once because they said, I want you to show me the most psychedelic movie that you can. And I was like, if you want to see a masterpiece of how to do psychedelic without using colors, without using editing techniques, you just want to see what someone does with the camera and a soundtrack, but makes it more psychedelic than most of them. This is that. This movie truly, with no fucking swirls, no disco balls, this is one of the most psychedelic things around. And we get Lorna back. We got Irina back. Jess is playing a shrink as well. We get a little bit of the spell magic of Macumba Sexual with iconography and art that is shown, you know, in its own shots throughout the film, and most of it being like artifact style art. So it further pulls you out of reality and into this strange universe that poor Lena is trapped in, where she cannot figure out what the difference between reality and dream is. And one of her greatest performances for convulsive dreaming, I think. Lena's really going full tilt with this one. I think this movie excited her. This definitely feels like one of her performances where she was like, oh, fuck yeah, Jess, let's go. This is the one. But it's oh my God, it's just so powerful. There's a moment where like the sound of a train is mixed in with this very atypical Jess string score that's going on that should belong in like just a regular movie. And then there's a moment in the orgy sequence where the music just drops out of nowhere so that we can just hear a zipper be undone. And then it turns to this horrifying voiceover that comes in to control Lena. And it's just some of the like strongest confident filmmaking.
Yeah. The fantastic use of the music in that scene, which, you know, I think Jess clearly loves his music concrete. And he definitely delivers one of the more interesting passages that you kind of wish like a lot of his movies would have music that got back to that kind of discordant level, because clearly he understands the parameters of discordant music and its effectiveness when used correctly. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a fantastic sequence. I mean, you know, this movie, like the end of House of Usher, where the characters left wondering out, like, was I in a dream or did any of this really happen? That sums up Jess to a T.
Yep.
And this movie delivers on that, unless you want to break down the ending, which is a little bit of a bum note in my opinion, but That's okay. You know, we don't need to go into
we'll
it.
We'll save it. Let's do that. We'll have a throwdown about the ending on the Patreon as well. We'll do that. The last thing I would say to folks, if you have watched Shining Sex at this point and you vibed with it, that energy of very little dialogue, but still saying mountains of things without it, this is the next movie for you.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right. So little dialogue. It's great. Now we're going to... The next one doesn't really exist, so we'll get into it on the Patreon. It's called Un Pito para Tres, which is One Dick for Three, which is basically a remake of El Hotel de los Ligas again. But yeah, we'll get into that on there because it's not really around, even in torrent land, but we'll talk about it there.
Yeah.
Next up, I know, I don't know. I don't know if you're excited to talk about this one.
It's a mystery.
You want me to
be excited to talk about it?
This is one we again talked with on our very first episode with David Gregory when their disc was coming out, which thank God the restoration's insane for this movie. This is one of my favorite in the bummer jazz realm, the sexual story of O, starring Alicia Principe.
I will say this. Is this movie as good as how he's normally attacked this issue? No. Do I like it more than Lily and the Perverted Virgin? Yes.
Okay, interesting. They're on the same
level. They're on the same level. I just think that this movie has... They're very similar. I think this movie has a little more of the fervor that we want from Jess. Mm-hmm. I do think the ending is quite striking, even if it's silly as fuck. You know, doesn't exactly hit those like hallucinatory notes you want from Jess, but it is a hallucination nonetheless.
Oh, I think it does until the final seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
I think this movie, I love it for a couple reasons. We talked about it a little with David, but it's some of his most direct and harshest on the nose, but I think awesome critiques of the ruling class and the racism that all of them have. Great joke about that as well.
Standout scene where they're sitting around at the table and they say, black people are disgusting. I don't like black people. And then says, no, they're fine. I just don't like Moors. And they're like, oh, don't be racist.
Yeah, it's great.
A little on the nose, but it's funny and definitely gets at kind of the politeness of discussions. I mean, if you're a certain person right now getting ready to sit down for family discussions at dinner, you might have some of your family members saying things very similar to this right now. That's going to be shocking to a lot of you and think, wow, I didn't know that I could sit down and let my family just be openly racist and think it's a cool political thing. It makes a thing in this movie. Yeah, like this scene actually like hit you with some like, oh yeah, I guess people still do act like this.
Yep, it's very contemporary. And he also gets in some great digs where these the bourgeois, and they're also their disgust with sex work, even though they are some of the main people who keep it going and always have. Also, we get some great jokes about impotent Spanish men again, and ones who not only cannot fuck without extreme harm to someone else to get them off, but also gets in a great jab about crying after sex, which I love. That's such a funny moment. But this, I don't know. I think the pacing of this one is pretty exceptional, because if you can hang with it, it really lulls you, because the sex is long for the first 45, 50 minutes of this. And I think if you go with it, it really lulls you in, because these are pretty people. They're having sex, they're having fun. And then in between that, reading Norman Mailer for some reason, which is also a funny joke. But by the time things start to get dark, you are lulled into such a weird kind of like a low BPM sort of state. That's why I think that final scene really does fucking go off, because you've been in this weird space and that forces you back out of it.
Yeah. Well, that mate shows back up.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh boy, does that mate show back up. Also, I do like his, this makes the second of his, a getting hit by a sprinkler seeming like a dark omen.
Yeah, that's true.
It happens in Lillian. I mean, when they're walking together and he's like, "Ooh, watch out for the sprinklers." And in this one,
when they're going to the beach,
yeah, like to
the beach. Ah, don't get wet. Yeah.
And in this one, yeah, she gets nailed with that sprinkler, and it is the first of many indignities that this character is going to suffer.
Yes, and I will. The last one I'll say, we can move on if you want. I disagree very much with Thrower as far as that Alicia Principa cannot carry this movie. I think she does great.
Oh, I really agree with that either. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
I will say I get from what. Sorry, I'm eating a banana, folks. I do see that, like, it's kind of a similar situation with How to Seduce a Virgin, where it's like you probably need someone who looks a little younger, who looks a little more innocent for this. I mean, she feels of a part of the other two. I mean, especially if you've seen Knight Has a Thousand Desires. She clearly just fits in with these other two.
Yeah.
That being said,
yeah,
I think she's fine. And I think the scene where they get brought to the that princess's house and It's like really dark on the inside reminds me a lot of the first Eugenie movie. Yep. She's walking around in their house by the seaside, you know, and it's kind of dark and there's no lights on in the house. The house feels very foreboding, and it probably wasn't a house, it was probably like a building somewhere, like a hotel or something, but it really looks creepy as fuck. Yep. So yeah, no,
I love this film. I really do. I think it's one that the older I get and the more I revisit it, and especially now with Severance and Restoration, the more I'm really very into it.
I also like how he calls it the sexual story of O. As if that story of O has anything but sex in it.
Yeah, this is also no relation if you're looking for story of O.
There's
there is zero relation, but, and we've actually never talked about it, I agree with Udo Kier, who's in Sexual Story of O. I don't think that movie's very good, and I think this one's a lot better.
Yeah. Along with Eric Romero, the other person to helm the story. Yeah,
give it to Romer and Franco on this one. Sorry, story of O.
Yes. All right. Well, the next one we can't review. It's an Al Pereira movie called Barrio Chino,
which Jess said was extremely violent, an extremely violent adventure film. Which, you know, I'm prone to think he's lying about it being extremely violent. But as always, I wish we could see it, but we can't.
Well, the photos look intense. I mean, see Lena in the dominatrix gear that we just saw in Sexual Story of O. You see the dagger that she wields in Knight Has a Thousand Desires. You see a little girl in the screen, which is like, because the thing we haven't talked about is there's been a lot of talk of child death in some of these movies. Revenge of House the Usher does that. Cries of Pleasure. The maid talks about how, yeah, I heard the couple kill an 11-year-old boy and bathe in his blood. There's another one too. But yeah, there's like child death kind of haunts these movies a little bit. And the girl in there, it looks like, oh boy. Yeah,
More intense in a good way, I think, even though the next film we talk about we're not going to be super stoked on. But
are you telling me that we're not going to be stoked on this next one?
Well, I will be more than you want me to, but not a lot, don't worry. But the kid thing, again, highlighting how little money, even though Golden Films is still putting these up but not getting them any royalties. Antonio Mayans, his wife, Juana de la Morena, she starts to appear in the movies. And also in this next one, Antonio's children, his two daughters, Flavia and Ivana, are his children, and they start to star in these Jeff Franco movies.
Yeah, they're the last one we'll talk about today, they're better in, but yes, they are in this next one, and it is called In Search of the Golden Dragon. Hands down, one of the weirdest I've watched in this, and that doesn't necessarily make the good. In fact, it doesn't. This is not a good movie. This is just weird as fuck, but less boring than like Chiduka Shadow versus Dr. Wong, because
yeah,
Give us a quick little rundown of just some things. You don't have to go through the plot. Just like, what are some things we might see in this movie that are completely strange?
Yeah. So we're back again, not actually adapting, but basing it on Edgar Allan Poe's The Gold Bug one more time. We get, again, plot doesn't matter, because honestly, the pleasures that are available
it's in just kids running around.
But it's just kids. One of them sees something they shouldn't have, gets into some trouble, so they go on the lam. And the adults are trying to find him. Kids are accidentally involved in a big thing. That's kind of all you need to know, because the pleasure is them running around. But we get amazing moments like Jess, again, unfortunately, playing an Asian character, a Chinese character, where he just closes his eyes a little bit and does a weird voice. So that sucks. But the best part is when, because he is blind, too. So you could argue I'm just deciding he's doing the same thing. But these little kids run up to him. And she says, "You are weird. Are you blind?" And then we get this supernatural samurai character named Samura, who squawks even louder than what's her butt in Erotic Rites. And not just squawks, but squawks every time they make contact with a hit. So every of the martial arts sequences is just constantly like bashed with quack, quack.
Yeah, it's something.
We get, and my favorite thing, the last one, if we want to move on, because it's fine. Check this movie out if you love Jess Franco. You'll have a good time. It's not good, but it's fun. But there's a sequence where a tortoise steals something from these girls, and it takes like 5 minutes where the tortoise is lumbering around, taking it again, and then delivering it directly into the hands of the bad people for some reason. That's the kind of movie you're in store for, because they're the main characters are truthfully just animals everywhere. Elephants and shit, tortoises, birds, whatever.
Yeah. It's an innocently uninteresting time.
Yeah. It'd be perfect for the Severn Kids line, actually. If they take care of this one, that'd be fun.
I would agree. I would watch it again with a certain dose of mind-altering substances to adequately describe what this movie is. But I will say it's better than this next one that Jess didn't even shoot most of. This has to be also one of the most abysmally boring times I've had in the Jess career. So we're going to try to keep this to under a minute. This is Golden Temple Amazons.
Yep. Jess shot the temple scenes, which are the closest to interesting, still not. This is produced by Golden Films, then taken over by Eurocine, because Golden Films didn't do anything with it. So they bought it, then hired one of my favorite porn directors, Alain Piat, to shoot a bunch more shit and make this one of the most abysmal, difficult movies to ever get through. The opening scene in slow motion with the worst music ever of naked women on horses is kind of cool. The end.
Yeah, and that there's a reference to Kuroku, Beast of the Amazon.
That's true. That is cool, I guess.
But again, I would love like to, it's a small character named after the Kurt Sodmek film. So that's the tiniest of pleasures.
I'd love to see Jess's original version. We never will. So for now, again, from the folks at MVD, you can buy a gorgeous Blu-ray of this if you want to. And then our next film is another one lost to time. El Abuelo, La Condesa y Escarlata, La Traviesa, which supposedly was a remake of Celestine, an all-around maid set during the Mexican Revolution. But we can't see it because all that's left is the negatives with no sound. Maybe that'll change today. But
We don't get the Celestine remake. If people are working on finding that, try to dig up Barrio Chino before this one.
Or really, what's the one from way back? What is it? Sex. What the other one was Soledad, man. That's what I want the most.
A Sex Charade.
Dig that up first.
Yeah, dig those two up. And then if you have time, you can get around to the Grandfather, the Countess, and the Scarlet Cross. You can get to that.
That's a great title.
Yeah, it's a good title, I guess. All right. Let's get into the next or the last two here. We have a trip back to our good friend Al Pereira. He's now named Alfredo Pereira.
And he's a family man. He's a dad. And his wife in the movie is his real wife, and his daughter is one of his real daughters.
Yes, yes. This is they're getting a lot of mileage out of Antonio's wife and his kids, but
the kids are pretty good in this one, though.
Yeah. They're fine. Yeah, this is Al Pereira is trying to solve another mystery, but this time he's got to drop his kid off, and it definitely feels like kind of. I don't know, like one of those mid-80s. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of divorced dad shit becomes very popular in American cinema, French cinema, Hong Kong. So, boy, a lot of divorced dad shit in Hong Kong cinema. But, yeah, no, I mean, I didn't even say the name, Camino Solitario. And this is, he's shooting for Manicoa Films again.
The Lonely Road. And this also is funded because Jess won some money from the lottery in Spain. So that's why it's in Manicoa Films movie again. I think this is a great curioso, not great, that's the wrong word, an interesting curioso for Jess fans because it really does feel very sincere and like truly does feel familial. And yeah, it's not
if he won a lottery for this. He is pushing that money to the furthest degrees. I think my guess is if we know Mr. Jess, he probably took a lot of that money for himself and then said, well, I'll use 10% of it to shoot Lotario.
I don't think so. I think when he says won the lottery, he probably means he won a scratch off for like $1,000 because that's all Jess needed. And he was like, guys, quick, I have enough for the next one. Come over tomorrow.
That might be true.
But I imagine you would agree the most fun thing gets to play two characters and yet again show off her truly impressive acting chops of making them very different people. And really chewing on that shit. I think she's really into this one.
She's another of the Raddick family. Yep. The Raddick family's back, the devious family. Yeah, no, Lena does good in this. She's definitely doing the most that we've seen from her at this point. I mean, even though that's not true. I would say she's been, honestly, these last 12 or so films we've talked about, she's been cooking at the highest temperature for her. So it makes sense.
We also get a hulking Orson Welles type character in this movie that is the Raddick. And he, god damn, you can smell him. He smells so bad. Dude's so gross. It's great because he's also asthmatic. So he's just breathing so heavily. But I don't know. I think this is another where Jess does not waste the use of mirrors. Obviously, he's talking about doppelganger shit with Lena's two characters. But I think it's a funny, strange little entry into the Al Pereira canon that if like we said, if you're on the train, get to it. Otherwise, save it till you are.
Yeah. It's funny to note that the week that this played, speaking of divorced dads, this movie was playing alongside Kramer versus Kramer.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a great double bill. This one would cheer you up a little after Kramer.
Yeah. It wouldn't be as good of a movie, but it would also not make you feel as bad.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to our last movie we're going to talk about today. A movie that Will hates that I call Thong Girls, even though that's the title of it. He gets mad when I call it Thong Girls, but it is called.
No, because I memorized all these movies in Spanish in my head when we started this journey. And my Spanish is rough at best. And so when John texted me and was like, shit, dude, you didn't send me Thong Girls. I was like, what the fuck? Is Thong Girls. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's what Las Chicas del Tango means, is Thong Girls. So that's on me.
He's under the name Rosa Almiral as the director this time. That's the fun little fake name that his producers chose, or he chose.
Well, because that's, I mean, Lena's real last name. So I assume it was him and Lena choosing that.
That's actually a great point. Well, here we are. We are in another plotless place. I mean, I guess there's multiple subplots that work out, but this movie feels completely plotless to me. And I say that as a good thing.
This is a
movie that I would normally hate. And I don't love this movie. Let me just calm Will down over there. I don't love this movie, but I enjoyed it a lot more than I was expecting to. I think there's I'm a sucker for a good summertime atmosphere captured on camera. And this did a really nice job of that and kind of showing the lonely arcades of this little seaside town. And what it does with the story is at least more interesting, because we're getting away from just constantly reheating stories. And normally the reheating process leads to a deepening, like maturation of themes and ideas. And like jazz music, he just returns to certain notes and they get stronger and more out there. This, thankfully, is, well, some real trans representation. I'll say that much. And he gets a shot at redoing that ending from Lace of Bronlace a little bit. So if you all think...
Yeah, the success in an odd mood where he actually wants to give the audience hope and giggles and some happiness. All set again in Benidorm. This one is just like Sexual Story of O, has some, I think, actually great digs about race adoption amongst bourgeois people. Great jokes about that. Again, forever laughing at Spanish men supposedly being incredible lovers. But what really frames this for me and what makes it so much fun is most of this movie is shot not just in places without permits, like always, but very heavily populated beaches, sidewalks, stores, restaurants, bars. There are people who are definitely not involved in this movie constantly around. It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to get your Letterboxd reviews where you attribute every time you rewatch a movie as being now queer coded.
Well, there's no coding. It's just
right. That's what I mean. Now you can actually do it instead of claiming that Home Alone is queer coded. You can.
Wait, is someone doing that? Has it gone that far?
I'm not gonna say who this is. I will. But I'm just saying there is a tendency right now as we become more learned of people that are not straight people. And we become a little more aware of other people's personalities, sexualities, who they want to be as people. You know, there's a lot of, I think, bad faith reinterpretations. It's a little like what you said. It's like when children learn a new thing and then they need to apply it to everything they see. And now everything has to have this new queer veneer to it, which, fine, go ahead. You're not hurting anyone. But here's a movie where you can do it and people will be like, wow, thanks for pointing that out. And, you know, not having it be like, how many likes can I get from just saying that, yeah, Johnny Five and Short Circuit is gay, is queer coded.
God damn it. Those two choices are too specific. I'm excited to hear where that's coming from later.
I don't know if those were exactly the ones referenced, but you'll hear who they're coming from. And when you take a look at this, you'll see what I'm okay. Whatever. It's a thing that a lot of people do. So my point being, we have finally landed on a movie you can apply all that analysis to, because
it's great. It's really refreshing. It's really interesting. Because we have, unlike a lot of the sex comedies, which, as y'all know, I tend to like them more than John does, but I absolutely agree this is the probably cream of the crop and that stuff. And like he does in them, it's a revolving door of all these different characters who are trying to figure out, you know, their lives, trying to figure out relationships, figure out what they're doing for the summer. And also one of the things that doesn't really get talked about with this movie is it kind of is an amazing summer camp movie, essentially, because it starts in a town in Benidorm that's flooded with people in the summer, and then a ghost town after that. And the movie highlights that in a really cool way. But what you were talking about is one of my favorite couples in all of Jess Franco for both sides. We have this ridiculous bodybuilder man who had played, who did he play? One of the monsters in another of Jess's movies. But there's this hulking, beefy man who starts to date this trans woman. And they're really into each other. And then it's time to have sex. And she is like, shit, I have to tell you that she's preoperative. And in that moment, he freaks out. He gets really upset. He slaps her. He says he doesn't want to see her again. So she heads to one of the only places where she feels like she's safe and has friends. She goes to the local club where that is a drag joint to see if she can get a job. And again, atypical of Jess, he shows up, realizes the error of his ways, and wants to be with her, and then says, and it's wonderfully not elegant, I think, in a great way, where he straight up says to her, I'm working my ass off to make a bunch of money so we can get your operation because I don't like dudes. And it's an uncouth way to say it, but it's an amazing thing to show that this man is not doubting that she's a woman. He's just like, we got to get this shit addressed and then we're good to go.
Yeah. No, it's lighthearted for this sort of territory, and it doesn't try to make it a point of like great tragic drama or the anxieties of it. It's thankfully sidesteps all of that, and it's just kind of what I would love to see more of these movies be, is just these people being people. That's yes. It. I don't and give a fuck like about like how to dramatize the struggle. As much as I think right now what people would love to see is just these people integrated into these movies without having to overly spell it out. And I think that this movie does it really well. And for all you people worried about grooming out there, this is a big one you should be worried about, because they take these kids to a drag show. And I don't even want to know what happened. I don't want to know what happened to these kids' minds after they left the lighthearted, fun drag show.
They found out their father was a drag queen.
Yeah, they became sexual deviants, probably. This movie thankfully doesn't show what happens to those kids afterwards when their minds are all fucked up. Watching people in drag.
It's also truly sick on Jess's part that thread of the storyline straight up is just like, this dad was embarrassed because he couldn't provide for his family. And I was also embarrassed that the thing that set him free and made him feel happy was drag. So he didn't want to show his wife or daughters, and that it literally fixes their family and makes them a solid unit, because now they know daddy's a drag star and they fucking love it. Everyone's happy. It's crazy in Jess Land, but it's cool. Like, progressive is a silly word. We don't need to use that all the time like we do, and we don't need to use it here, but we can use refreshing instead. Like you said, this is a movie about a bunch of different people, all sorts of people trying to figure out how to best live their lives.
It reminded me of how when I watched our buddy Sean Baker's Tangerine.
Yes. Yes.
It reminded me of that I don't know. It was just refreshing.
People being people.
Yeah. It was very refreshing. I'd love to see Celine Sciamma do something of this level.
Well, this movie's too long for her.
Yeah, this is too long.
Those of you who don't know, one of our last Patreon episodes, we had some fun with an article that blew our minds about what Celine Sciamma is up to when she's not making movies that she says have to be really short.
Listen, I know we teased you with going to our Patreon to get a rare copy of one of Jess's best movies, and maybe that does it for some of you, but if you really want to hear our feelings on what Celine said out there,
she gave us too many wins.
Yeah, no, Celine, don't. Next time, for our next episode dealing about you, don't make it so easy.
Please just come on the show too. Let's do it.
Yeah, we want to discuss Turning Red with you.
But yeah, I guess we're ending with Los Chicas del Tanga. It's a really fun time, and it's refreshingly humanist. Truly, it really is. It really fucking is.
Yes, it is. Now we've come to the end. And we're going to do some other things before we go back to Mr. Franco and his movies. But we might go back to an earlier model, and we might just fit a little more in, because we have another thing we'd like to do.
And I'm excited. I will say, all I'll say is the first when we come back, I feel a lot more strongly in the positive about this movie than Thrower does. But the first movie when we return will be Alone Against Terror, a really curious entry into Jess's filmography and horror films at large, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about that one. I Yeah. Will Jess's filmography become a little more wobbly over time, or will it get stronger?
Remains to be seen. But yeah, hopefully, you know, we'll see y'all out in the wild. Otherwise, we'll see you back here. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you.
Bye.